grew up in Hempstead. We had Hempstead General Hospital. They had the biggest lot in the world. There's about 15 or 20 guys we used to hang out, and we'd be able to play softball, football, and then the rest of the place was covered heavily in woods. And we played more cowboys and Indians. The parents didn't buy you many toys. Back then, we used to make clothespin guns, tie a rubber band, cut some cardboard up, use a piece of 2x4, an old nail, a lot of rubber bands that you went around the spring. And when you open that up, that bad boy fired. We had imagination back then. Parents didn't worry about kids walking home. We walked into town like it was about a 3 or 4 mile walk and thought nothing of it. And if we wanted to go fishing, we'd go all the way down to the Hempstead Reservoir, and 7 mile by bicycle. My dad was in the Navy. He was a telegraph operator. He owned various bars. Then he started his own business as a floor waxer. I remember from 11 until I finally graduated high school that his rule was, you live under my house, you have to work. His accounts were all taverns. So we used to start our day after 3 o'clock in the morning. My job was picking up the chairs, sweeping the floor, all that other good stuff. Friday nights, Saturdays, and Sundays. There was no holidays for us. So I learned the value of how hard it was to make a dollar and the hours you had to keep in order to be successful. I didn't want to go any further than high school. I wanted to become an apprentice to a plumber. My parents would not have it. They said, you have to go to college. State University. I used to hitch back and forth from Bowling Green, Ohio to Hempstead, you know, in 69, 70s. You could hitch any place in this country. You didn't hear about anybody getting molested or killed or anything. Everybody was really friendly. That was a great time. Society was different too. More open, more trusting. I had a major in organizational development. Mostly it was on how to improve an organization's productivity, how to motivate people. When I graduated, I worked for Nassau County on a grant that was funded by the Ford Foundation on how to improve productivity in the government sector. One of my assignments, I had to go to Oyster Bay and try to figure out how to improve the productivity of sanitation workers. What we decided, if you wanted more productivity, then you had to change your route design. Instead of having like 40 streets, you go down to 35 streets. That way, your guys were off the street before 5 o'clock when people were starting to come home. So if you wanted better productivity, you had to change the design of your routes and increase the number of vehicles and staff to remove all of the trash that was out there. So they added a couple more vehicles, added a couple more sanitation workers. Their productivity increased. Yes, it did cost them money. If you're not willing to do that, you're not going to be successful, because if you want change, change comes at a price. I went to nuclear in 1985. They were starting a very special project on Long Island for decommissioning the Sherman nuclear plant. As a result of Three Mile Island accident, the industry went through a complete learning curve. And one of the things that came out was an evacuation plan. And where Sherman was located, you only had Sunrise Highway. So we couldn't meet the evacuation plans. I was at Sherman for 4 years, 6 days a week, 12-hour days. It was interesting seeing a state-of-the-art nuclear facility that only went through 1% power testing being taken down. You know, all that's left there, it's a big mausoleum now. I remember at one point I was doing an inspection. They have a dry well. When in operations, it is filled with nitrogen. So we were going to cut the vessel apart. A mill worker and I went down on bosun's chairs between the nuclear vessel and the dry well. There's no more than maybe a foot and a half space. He measured, bored the first hole. That vessel was no more. Sherman nuclear plant, that was history at that point in time. Three Mile Island would have never happened if the operators just let the computers do what it was supposed to do. That plant would have shut down safely. The way we used to hang deficiency tags when something was out, they covered up certain dials and gauges so they weren't seeing what the computer was doing. And that's when we started making all the changes in the control rooms. A lot of times, early on in the industry, when the procedure wasn't working, people used to step outside of those guidelines and try to fix it. Human nature was, well, if it's not working this way and I'm following it, I'm gonna try something else. It's like when you get directions for putting something together, sometimes you go, really? It took us time as an industry to stop people from doing that. We always said, if the procedure doesn't work, stop and have it rewritten, have engineering look at it, figure out why we can't do it the way the procedure is written. Procedure compliance, that was the main issue. The NOC is one of the toughest regulators there is. These inspectors do a really good job. Some are picky, and some are more pickier than the next. I think it's safe. I was in the industry for 34 years, never got contaminated. Our country's gonna have problems, say, in another 10 years with all the plants that will be shut down because they've gone through their 40 years. Once Indian Point is shut down, those two units produce 2,000 megawatts. They've come up with 1,000 megawatts so far. They haven't come up with the second 1,000. I don't know if we're gonna have rolling brownouts. You can talk about windmills and you can talk about gas, but you take windmills and stuff, it's the storage and then it's the transmission. Where are you going to put the high towers? Not in my backyard. Or where are you going to dig that piping? Not in my backyard. So I don't know what they're going to do.